a little concern about somebody maybe incorporating and selling their equipment to the corporation and then permitting the corporation to get the credit or vice versa, or do that every couple of years back and forth. And so I think that we should indicate for the record that we would expect those transactions to be arm's length transactions.
Agreed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I will so state that in the legislative intent for the analysis.
Okay.
Chairman, move House Bill 2284 as amended for Ducat recommendation.
Objection. I'll move.
Carry the bill.
Once again.
Can I carry the bill?
I don't know whether Representative Mason and if
you
it's his bill. I'd be glad to carry the bill, but I think we should be given the courtesy.
Sorry.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Fender, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Amusement and Music Operators Association. And with me today is our president on the left, Mr. Fred Van Horn, and our vice president on the right, Carol McGowan. I thought we might begin by telling you a little bit about this particular industry, so you would have a greater familiarity with the purpose behind this proposed legislation. And we might be able to background you on our regulatory needs and why we are seeking passage of this. And I'd like to begin by having Fred Van Horn speak to you first, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm from Seaside, and I'm a...
Would you, for the record, state your name?
Pardon?
For the record, state your name.
Fred Van Horn, from Seaside, and I'm a route operator. I run video games. And as you have heard, I'm president of the State Association called the Oregon Amusement Music Operators. And this may not be historical, but it's certainly unusual that we come to you seeking regulation of our industry. Normally, it's just the other way around. But we feel that the games have developed to such a state that we may need some help in controlling their use. And all of us travel to other states where are associated in a national group, and other states have had a problem similar to what we're projecting. And to avoid the overuse of the video game, we suggest that some of the measures in our bill to limit the number of games and thus help us keep the thing in control, help the state and our local communities keep it in control.
Questions, go ahead.
My name's Cheryl McCowan. I'm from Eugene. I'm the vice president of the Oregon Amusement and Music Operators Association. We have Charlie's Recreation and Vending in Eugene. We operate approximately 250 games in the Eugene-Springfield area, and including two family amusement centers. We employ as attendants two senior citizens and 14 college students on a part-time basis, plus an office staff and a technical staff. We've been in the industry 15 years and have ridden through the roller coaster years of the 81 through 85, 81 and 82, or 80 and 81 being really crazy years where the industry went really wild, and 82 through 84 where it fell into a crash situation, which most people are aware of by now. We hope that 85 will be a stabilizing year for our industry. Our company does not operate the games that are covered under this bill. We operate amusement-only games. We do not operate the games of chance. However, it is all part of the same industry. We have chosen not to operate the games of chance because up until now it has been an unregulated area and subject to arbitrary action by local law enforcement agencies. And sometimes the actions taken against those type of games reflect on our end of the industry, and it tends to cast a shadow on our industry, and in some cases imposes unnecessary restrictions on our Pac-Man type games. Therefore, we do support the legislation being introduced because it will give everyone, both inside and outside the industry, some clear-cut guidelines on which to operate and on which to take action. I further support this legislation because it will define and protect the amusement device section of that industry. Thank you.
Mr. Haskell?
I need to know what the difference is between a game of chance and whatever else you call them, a regular video game.
There's amusement device and the games of chance, and I think the games of chance is defined in the bill. Maybe Tom would like to read it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, I think the distinction really turns on whether the ability to win on the game turns on the basis of skill or on some sort of random selected chance mechanism. And that would be perhaps the clearest delineation between the two types of games. I might pick up at this point, if I might, Mr. Chairman, and give you a little bit more background on those kinds of issues. Amusement games, by and large, to induce the player to continue to play, accumulate credits. And for the past 35 years in the state of Oregon, we have had various amusement games that accumulate credits in the course of operation. Games that accumulate credits based upon skill and games that accumulate credits based upon a random selection factor have coexisted within the state side by side.
For that same period of time?
Approximately 35 years, yes, sir. And so the issue that's before you today is not a new one. Our Supreme Court has stated very clearly that games that accumulate credits are not gambling devices per se, but can be gambling devices if employed in that sort of manner. So what we really have is we have an industry that has existed for 35 years, and with the electronic explosion has undergone a very rapid proliferation whereby large numbers of these games have flooded into the state and have been found in atmospheres that have not been conducive to good local law enforcement. As the result of that sort of difficulty, we have had regulatory problems, many of which have centered here in the Willamette Valley. In response to this, and because we are really dealing with an industry that has lived in this state as good citizens for, in most cases, two and three generations, we are advancing a piece of legislation to give the state and local officials the ability to control what has been an accepted practice for entertainment within our geographical borders. I think that the best way that I might advance that concept to you is that as you look through the bill has the standard definitional criteria outlining the type of device to be licensed, the various players within the chain, the distributor, the person who sells the games throughout the state, the operator who is the traditional vending machine route operator, and the location, which is the place where the public has the opportunity to participate in the play of the game. We have established in that particular concept licensing criteria for the various people within the structure so that they are known to state and local officials, and that state and local officials have the ability to determine if the machines are being operated in a lawful manner. This is not a brand new idea. The problem that occurred in Oregon has occurred in other states and occurred there before ours. We are simply trying to take steps so that this economic segment is not lost to the restaurant and tavern industry who enjoy the use of this type of device. For a mere, 4 to 6 square feet of space within one of these types of establishment, there is an opportunity for a patron to engage in an activity that moderates consumption of alcohol and provides them with an entertainment activity that they can share with their friends, and at the same time produces revenue for the location. Now, within that concept, we are mandating within the bill that the machines be operated in a lawful manner. In other words, if the machine accumulates a credit, the customer only has the opportunity to play additional games. We are not attempting to sanction anything other than that. It's clear that we have the, based upon court authority, the ability to continue to do that. But what we're trying to do is, by virtue of limiting the number of games that may occur at any location, curtail the opportunity for some type of a casino atmosphere from developing. In addition to that, our industry studies have showed that two games per location are as economically productive for the location as three or four, assuming the games are operated in a manner that's consistent with Oregon law. So within that particular kind of a concept, we are recommending to you as a legislative body an extension of the existing tax that now exists on all video devices. And just by way of background, I might point out to you that all games of this type are currently taxed by the Department of Revenue, and they bear a tax stamp that is renewed on an annual basis that has to be displayed prominently on the machine for their use by the public. We are simply suggesting that these games, these video games of chance that have a higher net production of revenue and have a potential for abuse, be taxed at a higher rate, and that they be regulated in a manner that gives state authorities the ability to control their operation. Now, that in a nutshell is the concept of the bill. We can't be sure that the process that we're advancing is the perfect one. It is one that is working in another state. It is not in a state that has had a history as long as ours, but it is working in another state. And we are trying to avoid the problems that have existed whereby outside interests have moved into states and rapidly changed the landscape of their entertainment industry. I might stop at that point and perhaps be responsive, because I can tell from some of the quizzical looks there may be questions about this, and I might really use your time more efficiently by responding to questions rather than waxing on about this.
Understood.
What's the point? What are you getting at? What are you getting at?
You get quizzical looks up here. Well,
obviously, we don't understand quite what the point is. You need to be a little more blunt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, we are simply asking that the games be taxed at a rate consistent with their ability to produce revenue, and that the people within the chain of commerce be identified and regulated. That's the point of the bill.
Right.
Well, I may be naive, but I don't understand.
What's the problem?
What's going on? What's really going on? What's the problem? I don't see that you've described any problem yet.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, the problem that occurred here in Marion County was that due to a large number of games being played in the area and intense competition between various segments of the industry, a pattern of operation emerged whereby the games were being played in a fairly blatantly illegal manner. This necessitated some type of a response by law enforcement authorities, and the Attorney General's office took the lead in this particular matter and proceeded under their RICO authority to seize games, proceeds, business records of 20-odd taverns and restaurant locations, and took investigatory actions against three local area operators. That would be the problem that spawned the necessity for doing something to regulate this particular industry.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I'm going to make a statement here, and then I'm going to pass to Representative Sides, hoping that he can do a little better than I. It sounds to me almost like, and this is probably the opposite of what you're trying to get at, but it sounds to me like you could almost be asking for sanctioned gambling. And so I'm just going to stop there and pass.
I mean, you're talking to a person, less government the better, and what you're asking for is more government. So philosophically, I have a problem there to start with, Tom. But and I'm not used to many people coming down asking to be taxed. So it throws me off a little bit there. Other than Marion County. Now, Marion County, if I remember right, the problem was that there was money being made off those machines in terms of almost like slot machines. I don't know. I can't remember the case. But how many distributors are there that will put up a $10,000 permit?
Well, we're aware of at least three distributors that are actively interested in the business, and we do have a distributor here today to discuss that issue with you.
How many operators are willing to put up a $2,500?
I might ask Mr. Van Hoy.
We currently have 50 members in our association, and we would estimate there's another 25 that operate that aren't members.
What would be the percentage that would come off those machines? Would that be worked out later in terms of the taxing? It would be a one-time shot that that person was paying?
No, that's an annual license fee in both cases. And we've estimated it'd be something like $6 million to the state in tax revenue.
Okay.
That's the income and everything.
One of the, I might add, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sides, one of the drafting errors within the bill is, and I was hoping Representative Schoon, being a revenue type, would catch us on it, but one of the drafting errors is it should clearly say an annual licensing fee, and it does not say that. It appears to be a one-time shot, and we were proposing that the fee be on an annual basis because the machines do produce an adequate amount of revenue to pay something more than a nominal $50 a year fee.
How could that be? I mean, if there's no skill involved, or are those the kind of machine? Am I thinking about the wrong kind of machine? Are you talking about the game of chance machine producing that much? How could that machine produce that much money when the amusement machine cannot? And everybody clearly knows that you're simply taking a chance, putting in a quarter, and running up the score.
Okay, Chairman, Representative Schoon, they simply attract more player interest. And they are, by and large, located in areas where adults only congregate and people enjoy the participation within the industry. They are not in locations where minors normally congregate, and they generate, I'm sure, internal competition amongst the various players who do stand there, much the same as a pool table generates a tremendous amount of interest amongst pool players, whether they are playing themselves or watching the play.
Tom, it seems to me like you've got a lot of people that enjoy doing something that there's no real return for and no skill involved with, or else there is a payoff on this, which is an illegal activity. I personally don't see too much difference between the machines. For example, I wouldn't know what a pinball machine was, be it manual or electric, whether that was a game of chance or whether that was a game of skill, because I don't think either one really can be utilized or just used to describe the machine. And so I'm taking from what you say that, although this may be incorrect, that the games of chance devices are out and out being utilized for gambling. Now, if I'm incorrect, please tell me. And I think your stand probably is that your amusement machines are not. And you're asking us, I think, to put a higher tax on the gambling machines. And as far as I am concerned, there are no gambling machines. So what do I need to know?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, these games are based upon our latest legal definition by the Oregon State Supreme Court are legal for use within the state at the present time.
For what purpose?
For entertainment.
Without any kind of a monetary reward, right?
Yes, sir. That's correct. And they exist within the state on that basis and have for a long period of time. And you know, we are not asking you to regulate something that is brand new. We're asking you to regulate something that has existed, and because of changing economic patterns and because of changing competition within a various community and changing hardware has grown into a full-fledged law enforcement problem.
Why? Why is it a law enforcement problem? I thought you couldn't pay anything on it.
Well, yeah. Obviously, under those circumstances, that exactly is exactly what was occurring and clearly can't continue to occur, you know, if these machines are going to be played lawfully.
Well, how's a higher tax going to solve this problem? Seems to me the problem is somebody violating a different law. Why is putting a higher tax on the illegal activity going to solve the problem?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, I'm not suggesting that a higher tax is going to, in and of itself, solve that problem. But it certainly provides the state with the machinery to adequately inventory and regulate this type of activity, which apparently was not being done, which led to the problems that occurred here in Marion County.
Now, aren't these machines currently licensed, and don't they pay the annual fee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, yes, they pay the current fee.
Tom, what are the penalties for Class A misdemeanor?
Class A misdemeanor is a $1,000 fine.
Okay. Kind of continuing along with Representative Schoon's line of questioning, I guess I'm listening to you talk about what the problem is and things like that, and the need to control the industry, and I guess I see line 32 on the last page as kind of coming, totally being opposite to that. And I don't see the connection between taking all of these things or saying that violations of this act is not subject to ORS 166 and so on as being really in the line of thinking of what you're saying to us. I guess I don't understand what that line has to do with it.
On page 3, line...
Page 4 of the bill, line 32. It's the RICO.
Oh, the RICO. Okay. What happened, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindquist, what happened in the last case was RICO was employed against a variety of both locations and operators. For those of you who are not familiar with RICO, RICO was advanced in the 1981 session of the Oregon Legislature to ostensibly control the incursion of organized activities from outside the state and to adequately regulate economic commerce within the state in terms of organized gambling activities. RICO is a civil process. By and large, it involves, in terms of the enforcing authority, a tremendous ability to disable any particular organization that it's employed against. Confiscation of business records, proceeds, equipment are all part of that particular remedy. RICO, in terms of burdens of proof, remains still a muddy puddle in the sense that we have not had very many cases that have proceeded up through the Oregon court system to define whether a mere preponderance of the evidence or clear and convincing evidence or whatever the court may determine is the burden. It has the effect of, when it's employed, also using the civil process to discover information that may not be available from a criminal point of view. In other words, RICO, in its simplest sense, is the opportunity to virtually club anyone into submission to a very severe civil penalty or face the consequence of going out of business really before the fact. It would appear to me that that is a fairly drastic kind of a remedy to employ against 20-odd locations and three distributors within a geographic area in one fell swoop. I think the industry in this particular case is recoiling against using a very large club to address a problem that may not be worthy of that kind of effort. I would be happy to provide you with further information on that particular subject, because it is one that I think every business person in this state has sensitivity to, because RICO, if applied in this context, certainly would apply to the real estate industry and the sales of real property, to public accountants in the administration of their practices and in the preparation of, you know, any type of a routine return, certainly to lawyers in the operation of their practice. And perhaps this was the first industry that was struck by lightning, but as a citizen, I'm not sure that very many people have the ability to effectively fight back. And as a legislative body, I think that's worthy of some inquiry on your part as to just what sort of standards should exist for the use of the RICO Club. It certainly was employed very differently than what I heard it advanced under in 1981. I mean, there were black Cadillacs with smoked windows poised on the border when that legislation was advanced. And I'm simply asking you to think about the question as to whether that really is an appropriate remedy for the solving of an activity that has been looked at as a misdemeanor offense by some of these people in the past. I think that's the reason that that particular provision is included here, along with the opportunity for the Department of Revenue, for every local city and county police official to know exactly what's going on within their community by virtue of this type of a licensing process. There isn't any question as to who the players are. They're not XYZ Corporation from Delaware or from some other foreign location. We're talking about real live Oregon citizens. And we are simply trying to provide enforcement authorities with the tools to be sure that we don't have some kind of an invasion from afar with the thought in mind of transshipping huge quantities of cash out of Oregon with some kind of an organized gambling enterprise. So we would see the RICO approach as being inappropriate if you had this type of legislation in place.
Tom, I was here in 81 when we adopted this, and it seems like longer ago than that. But, and of course, this is the Oregon version of the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act. I wonder if we couldn't investigate the idea of size of distributors' operations. And I don't have any figure in mind, but whether it's 50, 100, 500, 1,000, or whatever, but investigate size.